R.FM。
Dig deeper. Local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area on the new WHFR Journal every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. and anytime as a podcast from WHFR.FM. Join our WHFR news team as we dig deeper, making waves.
An evening of experimental sounds, a WHFR benefit at Trina South, Saturday, September 21st at 8 p.m. WHFR is excited to have our latest fundraising concert at Trina South in Detroit. This evening of experimental sounds will feature performances from local shoegazer indie band Cruise Italy.
Waves like
local experimental group Arthur Crow, and Madison, Wisconsin Casio pop artist Stephanie Rerick Jr. This evening has a suggested donation of $7 at the door, but has a sliding scale of $5 to $10. Doors open at 8 p.m. and music should start by 8:45. All donations at the door benefit WHFR. Trina Soaps is located at 1464 Gratiot Avenue in Detroit, near Eastern Market. For more information about this event, please check out our website, WHFR.FM. See you at Trina Soaps on Saturday, September 21st.
Hey, guess what? It's time again for another great WHFR record show. Join us once again for one of the fastest-growing record shows in the state. The 6th annual WHFR record show will be held Saturday, October 26th from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. As always, the show will feature tons of records, CDs, DVDs, and some killer music memorabilia, all sold by independent, local, and out-of-state vendors. Last year's show topped all expectations, and this year's 6th annual will not disappoint. For more information, including vendor info, look us up on the web at WHFR.FM, or you can give us a call at 313-845-9676. So remember to mark that date on your calendar, October 26th, for the 6th annual WHFR Record Show, the record show you won't want to miss.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and time now for our Tuesday Forum on the second Tuesday of each month, and we call it Dearborn Heights News and Views. You're listening to the Heights News and Views, presented on the second Tuesday of every month on WHFR Dearborn. Hey, we're making waves right here, 89.3 FM. The program today, which is being broadcast live in the studio on September the 10th, 2013, features topics of interest about Dearborn Heights, specifically a candidate who's challenging the current mayor of the city, and her name is Janet Battelow, who has actually been on the city council for about 12 years now. Yes. So she should know what she's talking about. We're going to be talking about her campaign, of course, but also and the issues involved in there, but also Dearborn Heights issues and topics that have come up recently, too. My co-host on the program is Ned Apigian, who is also a Dearborn Heights City Councilman, although not up for election this year, so he can say whatever he wants to say without being worried about quoted inappropriately in the press somewhere. So I'm going to turn it over for the introductions to Ned Apigian.
Well, thank you, Jay, and thank you, Janet, for coming on the program.
This being election year, and there are only two of our Dearborn Heights news and views before the election, we actually preferred dealing with non-incumbents. You are a major incumbent in the city, that's for sure.
She's a challenger to this office, and since we don't have a lot of time, and usually challengers are not well known to the community, although in this case, the community should know who Janet Badalow is. But the principle here is the challengers, and our WHFR Journal show on Fridays from 1 to 2 that I host, we're still getting some of the challengers for Dearborn City Council. And believe me, there's lots of them. So we're pretty busy on Fridays. So Janet is here with us now.
Right. Janet is pro tem, which means she's like vice chair. Unfortunately, she doesn't make a dime more for being vice chair.
That's not the point.
Janet, the program we got in four pieces, about 12, 13 minutes in each quarter. First, tell us about yourself personally. Let people know who you are, where you came from, where you went to school, mom, dad, the whole works. So I leave it up to you to begin where you want.
Okay, thanks, Ned. I really appreciate being here again, and great to talk to everybody out there. So I'm Janet Badalow, and I've been a resident of Dearborn Heights for 35 years, and I'm 42 years old, so that's most of my life. And I've lived in both the North and South Ends, so I've seen a lot of our city. And I was I'm currently married to my husband, John, and that occurred in 2004 in Dearborn Heights. So I have a very small family, but some of you may know. My dad, Vaskin Badalow, actually retired from the city as the city's magistrate and court administrator. And my brother, Vaskin, also. Is a lieutenant in the fire department, so our family is very involved in the city. My lovely mother, Jean, has just had to put up with all of it through the years, but she's been a real trooper and actually used to be one of the mothers that was the leader in my Girl Scout troop when I was in grade school. I went to Divine Child. I'm a proud class of 1988, Divine Child Falcons.
Just had a reunion or something.
Yep, we just had our 25-year reunion. I have to say it was wonderful to see everybody. A lot of people came in from out of town. And actually, there's one other of my classmates that is a Novi City Councilwoman. That would be newly elected year and a half ago, Councilwoman Laura Casey. So we've got some of that going on in our class.
Well, I thought you'd be the most famous one.
Well, I don't think famous, just more long term, because she's newer at it. But definitely, we share a lot of things in common, and we've had some good discussions about our respective communities. So, educational background: I actually started out here at Henry Ford Community College.
Yay.
And I transferred to complete my accounting degree to Lawrence Tech University in Southfield. And then I went back to school and did my MBA at Wayne State University in finance. So that's me in a nutshell.
I think they've renamed themselves as just Lawrence University now, but...
Well, you know, I'll have to look at my last communication from them because I didn't notice that, but we used to be Lawrence Institute of Technology,
right,
and then when I went there, it was LTU, so that's what my diploma says, but if they want to make another change,
my daughter got her master's in education from Lawrence.
Gotcha.
One of the most expensive in the state, but good programs, I guess.
Well, I have to say, what I was paying for undergraduate, and I remember it distinctly, was about $265 for my undergraduate per credit hour.
Mm-hmm. Credit hour.
And that was a
lot then, but it's a lot more now. But it was a great education.
Sure.
Sounds like a lot to me. When I started Henry Ford Community College, it was $5 a credit hour.
Oh, Ned.
Ned, you shouldn't have gone there.
Here, it was $5. You couldn't beat it.
I paid a little more when I came.
It was actually technically possible for seniors a few years back, or I think for about a 10-year period in Dearborn, to pay no tuition. They could actually take academic classes here for no tuition at all. And,
You paid a fee. I don't know what it was.
Right.
It cost something. It wasn't a lot.
So did you go into business after that distinguished background in finance? And
actually, I used to be a tax accountant. So when I graduated from Lawrence Tech with my accounting degree, I went into public accounting, and I specialized in individual income taxes and taxes for small businesses, accounting for small businesses. And I did that for about 8 years, and then I went back to school to get my master's degree, and after I finished that, I went and took my Series 7, 63, and was a proverbial stockbroker, for layman's terms, but so, that's financial planning.
So you never got around as a tax advisor consultant to read the 67,000 pages of the tax code?
Actually, I didn't have to read it because by that time it was online.
It was a nice
searchable database.
But of course, searchable, that is.
Yes.
There may be things lurking there that you didn't search for that might be pertinent, but that's...
I have had the actual paper in my hand because
made
in a couple of classes to actually go to the library and pull the volumes. And there is some very interesting information there, I have to say.
Well, we're going to ask you about your philosophies about politics.
Do you work for a company
later.
Doing taxes or just on your own?
I do taxes for friends and family, but, because I got to keep up with it.
Yeah, but you weren't working for like H&R Block or something like
no,
that.
No, I actually worked for public accounting firms.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I worked directly under CPAs.
Okay.
So.
Well, so you know something about money coming in and going out, with private companies anyway, and you've seen what's happened in Dearborn Heights over the years. And Ned, your next background topic is getting close to her campaign platform, I bet.
Actually,
no.
Not.
Okay, keep going. We'll get there first.
We're still in our first phase. I was hoping she would tell us she covered and actually even her. Her work history based on after her education.
Yes.
Well, there's something that's kind of unknown because a lot of people ask me, well, okay, you were one of those bean counter people and you sat behind a desk with a computer and a pen and pencil and a 10-key calculator, but do you have any management skills?
Mm.
Yes, I do.
Interesting point, yes.
But because I used to be a restaurant manager.
Aha.
I did it for a sole proprietorship that was in the West Village in Dearborn here. It's since gone out of business, but the location now is Chow's. So it used to be the Mad Hatter Cafe. And then I went to a corporate-owned restaurant known as Max and Irma's.
Oh, yeah.
So I've done both ways, and, of course, Max and Irma's being a lot bigger. I had about 60 employees that you were managing on the floor. You had to manage inventory. Food costs were definitely a thing, and labor costs. So all those things factored into...
Is this for more than one restaurant, their whole chain? Or
no, actually, I started out in the Canton location. I moved to... I was trained in Novi, Canton location. Then I was moved to Livonia, and then I left the company. So,
I didn't know that.
But it was definitely a, management.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people, a lot of things going on in a restaurant, and... from the standpoint of having front-end, you'll hear people talk about front-end, back-end managers for restaurants. Max and Irma's, it's one manager does both. So you've got everything that's going on.
The front and
you
the back.
You have to deal with it.
In the middle, too.
In the middle. There was lots of middle. So so there's my management experience that people always want to know.
Oh, good. Well, that's a good thing we asked.
Yes, absolutely.
There's not another one. That's it.
No, I haven't managed anything else, but that's about managing people and about managing business. So,
good. Okay. That pretty much tells us quite a bit about your history, your background, your education, and your work history. And you'd like to say something about your father being an important person in your life? Everybody knows
well,
him.
Well, Ned, you've known him probably almost as long as I have.
It counts. People in Dearborn Heights know your father.
Oh. Yeah, please explain.
Let's put it
Dearborn
this way.
Resident,
we
know him.
Moved here, and I was born in Ypsilanti. And when I was 6 months old, my family moved to Florida. And we came back here to Michigan in 1978, moved in our house on John Daly. And my dad went to work for the city as the city's court administrator. And, of course, a lot of people know him better as a football coach.
Right.
Because that was his love.
In Dearborn Heights?
Oh, not just in Dearborn Heights.
Yeah, that's why he went to Florida.
He actually used to coach for Edsel Ford. He's coached for Divine Child, for West Bloomfield.
All those people are around. They'll remember Coach Badalo.
Yeah, they definitely. We couldn't go on a vacation when I was a child And I'm talking, we went to Hawaii one time, and we were at an amusement park or some national park, whatever, and somebody said, "Coach!" And there it was. They recognized my dad, and, you know, so there was a lot of lives that he touched over the years, and he has actually been inducted into the High School Hall of Fame and the Catholic League High School Hall of Fame over the years. The last one was officiated by Lloyd Carr.
You see, that counts a lot, and a lot of people are going to relate to you based on that. That's why I brought it up. The other thing is your dad also ran for mayor.
Yes, he did.
And he did not win, but that doesn't make any difference. People know the name Battalo because of your dad running for office. So Janet had a step up on everybody else. She had almost a famous name of non-winners. Didn't make any difference.
Well, thanks, Ned. Now, I don't think we're a very political family, so maybe now, but not then.
Okay, great. That brings us to the quarter point, and which we'll do a little station identification. And you are listening to the Heights News and Views, a program presented on WHFR on the second Tuesday of every month. That's part of our forum talk show. And our guest this weekend is none other than Councilwoman Janet Battalo from the city of Dearborn Heights, and she is the mayoral candidate in this coming November
the
election.
Challenger, yes.
The challenger, right? I am your host, Ned Apigian, which presents this program on the second Tuesday, and we want to make sure those of you that tune in late every 15 minutes, we remind you as to who you're listening to and who's talking and what the program's all about.
I'd like to ask a question of Janet and you, Ned, because I happened to pull up this Press and Guide article from this last March about your candidacy announcing your mayoral run, even though you did announce it here in January. But,
yes.
You know, the papers don't always get things right. But nonetheless, the official announcement was in late April or late February, early March. Nonetheless, it said that someone else other than Mayor Politko had pulled a petition, but it's only yourself and Politko in the running for November.
Ooh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, there's another name here, but I won't mention it because
obviously
apparently they didn't get enough signatures or didn't return to
start. They didn't return
their petition.
Their petitions,
right,
yes.
Okay.
It's
so,
not
and of course,
common to do that.
Yeah,
unless
it's
council,
a,
but not mayor.
Well, if it's a multi-person council race, then you would have a lot of candidates, and we might not know all of them, but for the mayor's job, you folks didn't need a primary in August because you didn't have multiple candidates.
No, a lot of people were really confused about that, too.
More than for November.
Because the big
right.
You know, primary in Dearborn, of course. And actually,
so how many people showed up somewhere at the city hall?
We actually, the city clerk actually did announce it several times. So,
well, I'm sure, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, okay.
But
well,
now we have a November election every year. Right?
Yeah.
So
yeah. Well, that's pretty straightforward.
Good to remember.
Okay. I was wondering that if we could talk now, and really it's part of her campaign, but it's also part of her experience, since you have been on the city council for the last 12 years, what are some of the your experiences, the highlights, lowlights, things you've learned from those 12 years, obviously more than a decade, of changes in Dearborn Heights, too.
That's a real...
Can you sort of historically take us on your personal or professional political timeline through those 12 years?
I think so.
We've got the time.
When I first started,
what did you learn? What have you...
Well, I'll tell you what. First of all, the first year I got on the city council, I really, you know, we get our packets, and I endeavor to look at every piece. I mean, of course, I read all my packets anyway, but I would go further than that. I would research, you know, what is this? Because some things take, you know, they're over a period of time that they're happening and they're evolving. And so I used to, well, who is this vendor? What do they do for us? Oh, okay. Well, I don't know a lot about sewers, so I went on a tour. I don't know about the water system.
So I
went to the Water 101. We went, you know, I've gone to parliamentary procedures through the MML, Michigan Municipal League. I've done so many different things to try to educate myself on the various things that I have to see on our agendas. I mean, you know, truthfully, I Don't think I knew a thing about sewers other than I knew where they were adjacent to my home, and I thought I had a good idea of what they did. But I certainly didn't know how they did it, where they were, and how many of them we actually have in the city. So I've done that.
And this is very difficult to do, as Ned probably knows too, this additional research on things that you may not be directly familiar with, because it's just really a part-time job. I mean, they pay you as a part-time job, just like here in Dearborn.
Yes, although we don't make anywhere near what Dearborn does.
Well, I'm glad you pointed that out.
You know, every city makes their own selections.
Sure,
but
I
think the thing that holds us back, or what I've seen, is that we don't even have an office. A lot of residents feel that, you know, we have an office, and I know I've had a few residents, you know, call me at home because that's the number I provide. And they don't understand why I've answered it hello. So that's the reason, because you called my house, and that's,
I think in Dearborn they might have, besides offices, and I'm not sure about that, they have at least a secretary or way to leave messages professionally.
They have a full-time secretary that's dedicated to them.
Yeah.
We only have a part-time secretary that's dedicated to us, but they don't take, you know, I mean, if somebody calls the clerk's office, and they're housed in the clerk's office too, so they also do things for the clerk. And they will take messages, but generally we have to leave our own numbers.
And of course, seven council members, right?
Yes.
And that's the same as in Dearborn.
Yes.
But of course, Dearborn is about
double the
four
population.
Times?
Double.
Yeah, our population is about 57,000.
Oh, that's a lot. Ours is, I think, 100,000,
yes.
Maybe just a little bit less. I'm not sure about that.
You're a little bit less than double our population,
okay.
And you're double our size. We're 12.4 square miles, and you're about 24.
But in terms of city government services and so on, it also is based on how much income and revenue you get. Do you have
Absolutely.
Any, you know, high tax paying businesses like maybe Ford Motor Company like we do?
We have a tiny little Ford Motor Company that are doing prototype vehicles. So we've got a tiny little bit, but we are a bedroom community, and we certainly have more residential. The businesses that we have are small businesses for the most part. We don't have a lot of big box stores. The biggest stores that we have
strip
are things like Kroger's,
okay.
you know.
Okay.
So, but we do get the addition of some corporate stores, like we just had a Big B Coffee move in and that sort of thing.
I just brought that up for the sake of comparison with why you have slightly reduced facilities or capabilities for the council people, and even the pay might be based on budget.
The Dearborn budget's like $100 million. Ours is closer to $40 million.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're about 37 right now. Yeah.
Could we return back to the
chronology?
So
what did you learn?
You had to learn to do research.
Yes. Well,
and then
of course,
you learn from
being
that.
In school, you do a lot of research anyway, and especially since taxation was part of my degrees, we did a lot of research, but. This is different sort of research because I don't have any sort of degrees. It's not my field. So the research is a little more difficult, but I just asked a lot of questions, and I read a lot of material, and thank God I'm a fast reader. So I was interested, I did a lot of networking through the years with other elected officials in other municipalities. I've been a member of SEMCOG, which is Southeastern Michigan Council of Governments, almost from the get-go. They really provide a lot of great information for elected officials, and I've served on their Budget and Finance Committee for about a decade.
Hmm.
So I was appointed by Marion Mahaffey, who was then the chair of the Detroit City Council and president of SEMCOG. So I did a lot of that in my first year because I got myself pretty up to speed in about 9-10 months.
Mm.
So when I came into the second year, now it was, okay, now what do I want to say about what I know and what my experiences were in the past? So then it's, you know, about looking at the budget. I've made my own suggestions from year two on about what I think we should do. And that's where I went with that. And, you know, moving on, my second term, I mean, you have a lot of different challenges. The economy, of course, you know, 2007, 2008, there was definitely some indicators there that things were going to happen. I get a lot of that, too, from my husband, who actually, his degrees are in economics, so we have some really good discussions about what's going on in the national and local economy.
For the county.
And he's an auditor at Wayne County, so we have a lot of good discussions about, you know, what's going on with government in general.
That must be an easy job now, because there's not much left to audit. No, I'm just a bad
joke.
Bad joke,
he wishes that someday.
Right, it's very important to figure out what's who's spending what amounts of money on what, yes, and whether or not it's being done legitimately and so on.
Yes. You know,
corruption charges are rampant.
Well, it's,
Janet, based on today and 12 years ago, what is it done differently 12 years ago than it is today?
In the city, in our
city
government?
In the council, because the present mayor wasn't the mayor 12 years ago.
He was the council chair at that time,
right.
Yeah, when I was first elected.
So what differences do you see? We'll talk about
hardly any.
We got
actually,
a lot,
which is part of my.
We have a lot of time to talk about what you're proposing.
Well, we're actually, talking about it's only a lot of time if we were part of commercial. I mean, it's a lot of time for compared to what you get on a commercial news show, and because I think most of the sound bites and the 30-second stories are just not enough time to get to know anybody.
Right.
Just as a background, little political science here, folks. Dearborn Heights, just like Dearborn, the type of governmental organization you have is referred to as strong mayor.
Yes.
In other words, there's more power and authority to take direction and to initiate plans for the mayor than for the council. So the council
more
is
like
not really board. Like a legislature.
No.
Or, of course, a lot of our legislatures are, gridlocked these days, but it's not like a legislature in that you have to propose anything that's going to be happening, and you have to pass it, and then it gets to the executive office, like the President of the United States or the governor. In most cases, it's the mayor that makes the proposals, and
yes,
you
it
have
is.
To either say yay or nay, but...
I mean, we do have the opportunity, though, to bring things to the council, and I have before, several things I've done. I've wanted to increase efficiency, and I want to get out more information to the public. So in my first or second year in office, I was reading the SEMCOG, booklet newsletter, and it said about a community using e-packets. Mm-hmm. And what they do is our council agendas and all of the information contained within is put into a searchable database, PDF file. And so you can easily put it out on your website. It can be emailed to people through like a list if they sign up for that. And it also provided for the council to have it on laptop computers and, of course, semi-paperless. Paper is very expensive when you're using a lot of it. Ink, you know how that goes every time you go to the store and buy some. So I proposed that about... it was in 2002 initially, and then 2005, I actually had Kathy Dornan, who was then the Farmington Hills City Clerk, come in and do the presentation, and then I brought it back in 2009, and I think I'm going to give it a go again this year.
Wow.
So.
Yeah, I in doing research for this show, Ned is always there at the console, but I'd like to fill myself in. It's difficult for me even to find the minutes of the last meeting unless it's 4 or 5 months back on your website. So
yes.
I did see, and we'll get to this more later, but one of your campaign issues that you mentioned a few months ago for the paper here was trying to get the website up to date and more helpful.
Yes.
The minutes are also published. We decided to
We publish them in the paper, but unfortunately,
but if you don't
not
subscribe,
everybody gets the paper.
There's fewer and fewer people reading papers, unfortunately.
Not everyone has cable.
Right.
So providing it online, there's another opportunity for people. And, of course, you can go to our libraries.
Yeah. I should mention, because our WHFR News Director, Dennis Reimars, is part of your cable operation, that's something you're actually besting Dearborn on in terms of the programming for almost a full channel of different kinds of shows. Dearborn does record its city council meeting, I know, and that gets on cable. But
yes.
And yours does, too.
Right.
It gets on
right.
cable, yes.
Right. I knew that, but we wanted to clarify that. So you could, it's rerun mercilessly for...
Twice a day till the next meeting.
I think it's 3 and 9 a.m. p.m., and it's until the next council meeting.
Yeah.
So it'll be run for approximately 2 weeks.
4 times a day,
But the point is, there are a lot of people, we all know, those of us that use cable, a lot of us like on-demand, and the Internet is on-demand. And it would suit a lot of people to have that available. And if you didn't have a computer, you can go to our libraries and rent one.
I have to say, sometimes the discussions can be without the viewers doing appropriate research themselves, can be somewhat confusing or maybe boring. I'm sorry to say, great television does not come from, you know, smart discussions usually, especially if the audience is not up to speed. So the minutes online promptly, I think, would be a big help. But it's great, too. I see no reason why the public shouldn't see what your packet for action is supposed to be. And so if they wanted to make a comment, there is usual, at least minimal time for public comment at the end of the meetings, right?
Yeah, there is. And I know that's something that I've brought up in the past because I think it's kind of silly in some ways that the public doesn't get enough time to comment. Now, granted, our packets come out, so the agenda is available to us, and then they subsequently post the current agenda online. But that's only on a Thursday evening, and our meetings are on Tuesday evenings. So if you don't catch it over the weekend, and of course, you might want to call one of your council members or somebody like that. They may or may not be available on the weekend for you. Then you only have Monday or Tuesday to get a hold of them to make a comment. When you come to the meeting, the public comment is after we voted on everything. Now, I went to a Garden City Council meeting one time, and I noticed that they have public comment before each voting or action item, which allows people to actually talk about the specific issue at the time before they vote, which I thought was very helpful. And I have suggested that in the past, but it's not been a favorite. Also, you know, taping our study sessions, because that's where a lot of the meat and potatoes happens, is at our study sessions.
I'm just going to bring this question up before our halfway station ID, and then we can get into your campaign and those infamous campaign promises. Ooh, I'm ready for those. I'm going to take notes. what will you try to, you know, change? But in terms of history here and sort of finishing the timeline, for a while, since 2008, the word was kind of around communities that Dearborn Heights was doing better economically than Dearborn. Now, we did have to pass a supplemental millage to help us sort of balance the budget, at least for 5 years. It's a temporary one-time thing. Hopefully, property values have come up and compensate for that.
We did the Headley, and they did that.
Right. Right. You did a Headley over.
We didn't have time to do
but,
that.
But technically, you're in debt out there.
We're $5.7 million as of the last audit.
But you're under a program, a five-year program to sort of balance that
actually,
out or something?
I wouldn't call it a program.
So you're not under emergency financial manager.
No, we are not. Cities are not allowed to run deficits according to state law. So when we did, the state said, hello, we need to have you file a deficit reduction plan with us. So that's what we did.
Which had a five-year limit.
Well, yeah, you only got up to 5 years. And, you know, I called it the work of fiction, which I still stand by, because last year our city budget was supposed to run a $2 million surplus, and we ended up running a $526,000 deficit. That's a $2.5 million difference to the bad. So we had to amend our deficit reduction plan yet again. Now, in my mind, when you have a five-year plan and it's this sort of plan, you need to stick to it, because in 5 years, the plan is to be out of debt. You can't just keep amending it as you go along because things don't go so well or you don't make the necessary changes to make it happen.
And then the state would have to come in at that point probably, or decide to come in, since that plan might fail in 5 years or four more years, to impose the emergency financial manager.
Well, yeah, they would take steps, but I have to say I was a little disappointed at the state's oversight, which I think is very little at this point. When we were in this deficit reduction plan, like I just said, we really did a $2.5 million difference to the bad. The city council heard nothing from them.
Didn't say anything. Yeah, they're probably too busy with all the other cities.
Well, apparently there is, you know, some others that are worse, yes.
Dearborn Heights' situation is very good next to most of the other smaller communities here. It's time for us to rededicate ourselves as to who's talking and why. You are listening to the Heights News and Views, a monthly talk show program presented on the second Tuesday of every month here on WHFR on 89.3 FM, making waves from the Henry Ford Community College radio station, broadcasting from Dearborn, Michigan. Your hosts today are myself, Ned Apigian, also a councilman in Dearborn Heights, and Jay Koronek is here running the board and asking questions along with me. Now back to our host today, who is Janet Badalo, our candidate for mayor this year.
Yes, and let me just add, Ned, that all the opinions expressed in this show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College, and the whole idea here is not to promote or suggest that you should vote for Janet Badalo for mayor. That's not our place for this show, but we're giving her a chance to answer a lot of our questions and maybe to allow you better knowledge of what kind of mayor that she would make. You may already have an idea of her background and her her work on the Dearborn City Council. And Mayor Poletko, we've had him on the show just to talk about Dearborn Heights in general before, and we think as an incumbent he's had more than enough exposure, since we can't really talk to everybody in a few hours we have every week and every month on WHFR. Okay, back to Janet Badalo then.
Here we are.
Hi.
She didn't really go away, folks. Yeah, she's actually just sitting a few feet away.
We just want you all to know that she's here and who she is and what she's doing.
Yep.
And well, let's get down to some questions, because right. I know you have them.
No, I'd actually rather hear you talk about what you think are some of the... We can divide this as solutions on one end, and then what are some of the problems? What do you think we should be doing differently?
Well, I think one of the things
mayor would be doing differently under our form of council.
Well, what I would like to do is utilize technology. Now, technology is great, of course, when it works. We all know how that goes. But there's a lot of things available to us as a city that would help us. And, of course, we just talked a few moments ago about the e-packets. You know, that would be getting out information to the public, better communicating with the public. And also, you know, creating a searchable database and making the city or that portion of it semi-paperless, you know, going towards a paperless environment, which reduce costs over time. And that means we don't have to store all the paper either. So that's one thing I'd like to do is, you know, update our technology to help various departments. Ordinance department is one of them that I think we could really utilize technology. I'd like to see them use tablets. And when they're out there, and they're at a location, they can take pictures, they can check a box, make notes, right when they're there looking at the problem.
Dearborn has a similar system.
I know that.
And ordinance, for those that are not part of Dearborn Heights like myself, that's like our building and safety department in Dearborn?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It is. So ordinance enforcement.
We separated supposedly into its own department from building the... From the building.
Yeah, it's moved departments. Actually, right. I think it just needs
Dearborn
its own.
Merged and unmerged several times,
yes.
And I'm not actually sure what the names are or the different responsibilities. They did try more separation, then they went back together more. And now, for example, all their inspectors or ordinance people, I guess,
right,
are being trained to do every kind of inspection. In other words, not just residential, mm-hmm, but so they're all multi-skilled. They know all the ordinances, and they can be sent for whatever job is needed on that day.
Right.
That I do know that change happened to us. I'm not sure you folks ever had that separation before.
No, we have, I mean, our building department deals with if you're getting a certificate of occupancy, if there's an electrical, you know, plumbing inspection, that sort of thing. Ordinance is like if you have tall grass, your gutter's hanging off.
Okay.
So you're not in compliance with our city ordinance.
So it's not building code issues.
So it's not
ordinance.
Building code,
okay,
issues. Gotcha. I mean, it can be, but they refer them to the building department.
Okay.
So, because they have a different skill set.
Well, what about the fireworks regulation then that you just passed?
Who
enforces that? The police department?
Yeah,
actually, it's the police department. Of course, we have a fire marshal, so okay, they, you know, the fire department also does, you know, enforcement as well. But I'll tell you what, and I've already told our two state representatives and let anybody else out there, local elect officials do not like this current fireworks ordinance. It has left us holding the bag, so to speak. We have to do all the enforcement. We can't make any rules ourselves. And I'll tell you, residents are just up in arms about this. They love the 4th of July to celebrate, but it started in June and it ended in August. and people are tired.
Well,
and
the new ordinance is a little different.
I'm still hearing fireworks almost every night. I don't know if just in my head or if there's a business that has authority to do that late night on Tuesday.
Well, the state wanted
Tuesday
to
nights,
bring in more revenue, and we know that that's the reason why they allowed commercial fireworks to come in and be sold in our state. But the unfortunate part is they didn't provide any revenue to the local governments to be able to deal with these new fireworks that are coming into our area.
Because there's health and safety issues.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And they are much more dangerous. Although I have to say I think the most dangerous is those sparklers. There was a little girl a couple of years ago that actually set her dress on fire with a sparkler. So those are dangerous too.
Animal laws?
We did have animal control until it was removed from the mayor's proposed budget 2 years ago. I guess we just got a new one hired, but I'm not sure if they're going to be full-time or part-time.
Yeah,
or
I thought you folks did have your own
The ordinance people are supposed
we
to be
did,
trained
like I said,
both
we had
ways
a two-year gap, and the idea, I guess the administration's proposed idea was to have ordinance officers slash animal control officers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't agree with that because I think they're two distinctly different jobs, and they have a different skill set completely.
And you don't have a shelter that you run, an animal shelter?
No, we do not. Actually, we used to utilize Taylor Animal Shelter. I don't think that we're utilizing them anymore at all. Mm. So I think we're in limbo with that as well.
Mm. Of course, Dearborn has a great system because we had great volunteers that came together about 25 years ago to actually make a proposal and take over a complete management of the animal shelter, the Dearborn Friends for the Animal Shelter.
Well, I have to do a plug for them if I can.
Yeah,
they're
absolutely
having an
wonderful
upcoming
people.
Fundraiser that I've been mm-hmm. invited to, and it's September 20th. It's at Park Place Catering. And tickets, I believe, are $45 in advance, $50 at the door, and it is to benefit the Friends for the Dearborn Animal Shelter.
It's called the No Beast Feast.
And that is right up my alley, being a 22-year vegetarian, let me tell
you. And they have some of the best vegetarian food that local chefs can provide. And I went to it last year, by the way. But I'm just saying that...
Looking forward.
I mean, I'm sure a lot of governments would like to have unpaid volunteers taking over... professionally taking over a lot of operations of the city. I mean, how wonderful would that be? Of course, how many unpaid volunteers can put in the hours needed? I mean, you have to have a living. It can't just be all seniors.
This
There's only
true.
So many seniors to go around, first of all. But it's wonderful that, and if I'm not mistaken, the Friends for Dearborn Animal Shelter actually started as a group of secretaries at Ford Motor Company and professional women beyond secretarial levels who, I guess over lunch or whatever, decided to do something for the community. What could they band together and do as an outreach program, and it's grown to this wonderful organization under Elaine Green today, and it's Dearborn still pays a small amount of money. Of course, the facility is in bad need of totally being replaced by a new one. Maybe when they leave the current train station for the new train station, Dearborn, at least that property will be available, and we can start official fundraising for a new facility. But I'm just saying that's. There's only so many volunteers to go around, and you can't operate city government on no money.
That's right.
But key services, like there's always problems with animal populations, whether it's domesticated animals like cats and dogs and a few others, or it's rats. I'm sorry to say, I keep hearing every now and then that rat populations are larger in Dearborn Heights than Dearborn.
Yes, I have heard
that
too.
Is that still a problem, or is that just one of those urban myths?
No, it definitely is a problem. I think that, we've had a lot of abandoned homes, foreclosed homes, homes that remain vacant. People have not just trash. You have trees that actually produce fruit, and they like those too. And we all know that rats will travel, I think it's up to 2 miles for food. So they might make their home with us but go somewhere else as well for, lunch and breakfast or dinner, and then they come back home and they live with us.
So what department's concerned about that if there are reports
of
rats? Is that fire or
the ordinance department?
Ordinance,
actually.
They get it. Oh,
yes.
They get the rats.
But we don't have, Dearborn, I know, has a vector control program because actually one of the people in it is actually in my neighborhood association. So he's been really helpful to us, and they presented some plans to the mayor last year, And I think they're just starting to do it now because vector control is specific to rats. And there's a lot of things we can do to prevent them. We're never going to eliminate them completely, but controlling them is really
that's,
the goal.
That's the issue. Well, your first point about what you would do as the next mayor, if so elected, was utilize technology more. And we've been talking about perhaps some additional elected offices, even though that takes money, that takes new money. But maybe there is a need for someone with animal control or special expertise or relationships with other cities.
These are things that residents need. Mm-hmm. I mean, when a resident calls me and I have to tell them that I'm sorry, you know, the last 2 years, like I said, that we do not have an animal control officer, and I can only tell them where they can drop off the animal. It's also not free to them. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things that are wrong with the situation, and cities are here to provide services to residents. What we do.
Right. Back in May, one of the offices you suggested was to hire a grant writer for the city.
Yes, and I contract with the grant writer because there are a lot of people out there that are professional grant writers. They have a certain area of expertise. You know, say they, you know, write grants for recreation, or, you know, they write grants for infrastructure or whatever. But the point is, there are these people out there, and every grant has an administrative portion of the grant if you're awarded it. It's usually up to 20%. Mm-hmm. So you can pay your grant writer out of that administrative portion. Now, who better to do it than somebody knows how to do it? Grants are not simplistic, so you have to know what you're doing, know what they want, and be able to write a grant that's going to be awarded to you.
We have a history here at Henry Ford Community College that's checkered in that regard, although we do have a foundation and a development office now, and therefore grant writers identified to help. It was pretty tough to get started. I mean, we thought we were able to support ourselves just on tuition alone, and of course times have changed, and state support continues to decline, and so grant writing though does
fills in the gaps.
It fills in the gap. It usually pays for itself. Now you have to find the right person. You have to find a person with knowledge about. And it's different for a grant writer for a college or a university or a grant writer for a city. It's different kinds of programs
that's why I want to
have
contract
to be available.
With them.
Right.
Because I don't want to take somebody on the payroll because that's just too expensive and it's out of the realm.
And you can make changes perhaps if needed too more
and
frequently.
And you can have multiple. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the whole point, is finding a professional person that this is their area of expertise so you get something out of it. You don't want somebody writing grant after grant for you and you never get any.
And they need to, of course, liaison very closely with your current offices and personnel in those offices for all the appropriate information. Every now and then when we were getting started here, we get this grant awarded to us. No one asked for it, and it really wasn't appropriate at all. In fact, we even thought a couple of them, this is like 20, 30 years ago, but when the first guy started here at the college, that what are we going to do with this? It's taking us in the wrong direction. It's not appropriate.
Yes.
So they've got to have that tight communication, and that's the only thing I can think about contract grant writers is that they would stay out of the city too much, that they've really got to get close and know what your goals are and what your future plans are, and then mesh with that.
Well, I think
that's real important.
The communication with the department specifically, that's what they would do, because the departments can tell them, the administration can say, this is the direction we're going in, but departments will tell them what they're looking for. And that's what I'm interested in. I mean, if we can go farther with it in years to come, that's great. But we are missing out on opportunities. And I don't want to miss out on opportunities. You never know.
Tell the people who we're listening to.
We have received many grants without a grant writer. It doesn't mean you shouldn't have one.
In fact,
usually they're department heads. That have gotten guys. We got $500,000 for a fire truck.
The fire department wrote those grants.
The fire department. So it's not that we never got a grant.
It's all gravy for a department head who's not overburdened and is intelligent. I'm sure it's even one of the expectations. Get grants if you can. Apply for them. We'll approve of the application.
Well, this is true. But
there's it takes time. I know how much time it takes, and some of these are quite long. They require extensive documentation and
yes,
even itemization of things that might be purchased, and then after you get a grant, there's, of course, the management that's required and the follow-up reports that have to be written. So it does take time, and, you know, many city officials are already so busy, they may have the time actually to do the grant application, but they may not have the time to follow through they get it with all the reports. So
that's true.
A new subject is, if you want to do things differently, you have to change the charter. What would you suggest changes in the charter so that the council has more authority, the mayor has more, the mayor's authority is reduced? What would you like to see?
Well, you don't, Ned.
Because I know you're familiar with the
charter.
Well,
I'm definitely familiar with the charter.
I saw yours.
Charter,
it's got little earmarks on each category.
Yeah, my charter has a lot of tape flags and underlinings, but I'm not looking for a charter change. I'm looking for, obviously a change in management style, administrative style. You know, for me, it's a group effort. You know, I expect to be, if I'm elected mayor, I expect to be maybe at the head of the boat. But I want to work closely with the council with ideas that they have, work with other cities on things that they've already implemented so we don't have to reinvent the wheel. They've already bug tested it for us. What could be better? So I don't think there's a necessity for a charter change. If the community wanted to do that, really the only other way we could go with it is a strong council, which would constitute a city manager, which is typically hired by the city council. And then the mayor in a strong council situation ends up being a member of the council, and they vote, whereas our mayor doesn't.
Folks, can you change your charter just by amendment from the council?
We have to have a charter commission in Dearborn.
No, you do that every 10 years. We don't do that.
If the public wants it,
yes.
Of course. We decided we didn't want it. We did it, in fact, a couple of years ago. Yes, we did it a few years ago, but it didn't result in
the city council can propose
charter amendments, and then we have it certified by the state, and then it goes on the ballot.
It could individually go on the ballot.
Individually, we can select things. Yeah. Yes.
Well, we're actually doing a charter amendment for the library.
There's a proposal,
which
on the November ballot.
Yeah, we're discussed tonight. I think I haven't read.
Well, we'd like to have a Dearborn Heights News and Views second Tuesday every month before November, just about that library millage proposal.
Well, I would definitely hope that I'm sure our library director will make himself available for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ned's going to work on it here. But let me ask the big question, which is indicated in a previous story here about you and your campaign, that you think the city has to make cuts, but you want the cuts to be made fairly. You said you'd talk to employees about what needs to happen so that they would buy into the plan because, morale in many places, of course, especially city governments around, is so low. Where are you going to make the cuts? Do you know yet? Can you say? What kinds of cuts are we talking about?
Well, there comes a point where, some departments, you just can't cut them anymore because they're almost non-functional if you do. But there are other departments that you need to restructure. So I guess that might be a better way to say it, to restructure some of the departments. But, some departments are a little top-heavy, and I think that it would better serve the public if there were more, worker bees on the bottom of the totem pole than management. So
can the mayor do some of that removal of top heaviness?
Yeah, it's always proposal wise, but the point is,
are there some appointees who could be removed with our council?
There are some appointees,
that can be
removed.
Okay.
But I think the major thing is to look at our city government, look at what we need to provide to citizens, and try to find out the best way to do that. There's been talk in the past of combining departments, reducing administrative portions of certain departments, but it's never happened. And I think that we're at the point, obviously in a deficit, that you need to start having real conversations about that and doing it. Now, I said, I think at the time of our last negotiations with most of our unions, I said, this would be the time to cut positions out of the budget, because then they're not part of the negotiated contract. Well, that didn't happen. So now we still have them in the contracts, and contracts aren't up for, I think, either 2014, 15, some in 16. So that poses a real problem. When you want to make changes, I think gradual changes are the best, and that's why I talked about having buy-in from, the workers at City Hall, who, by the way, are mostly residents. there are a lot of residents that are workers in the city.
Because there already have been, I know, some take-backs, giveaways, employment changes in the fire department and the police department. Yes, the whole city has gone down to a four-day week, closed on Fridays, remember, folks.
Which needs to, we can talk about here is what's the problem with that, if there's any advantage to it.
Let me ask in the remaining 5 minutes here at least about merging. Anything that would be appropriate in terms of, Dearborn has merged its fire department now, finally, after a couple of years of negotiations with Melvindale. But we had a particularly good geographical situation there where a lot of our fire departments in the south southeast part of Dearborn were very close, right on the almost the edge of Melvindale.
Yes.
And could provide a lot of services if allowed, and therefore reducing costs for the city of Melvindale under this
we have the same contract. Thing the mayor's been in discussion with the city of Garden City.
Well, actually that started with the fire department. It actually started at the union level, and I think that was the best place for it to start, because what people don't realize sometimes is all of these departments in various cities are structured differently.
Right.
You don't just have, I mean, everybody doesn't have a chief, one deputy chief, and some captains. That doesn't happen. So when you're trying to fit them together like a puzzle piece, it doesn't always work. Now, what you mentioned about the geographical aspect of it, which was one of the reasons why we weren't able to do anything with Garden City or Melvindale, because it just wasn't geographically possible. We couldn't provide enough.
Because we have an extremely strange shape.
We have a horrible shape for providing services, and unfortunately we weren't able to do that. I really think it was a good fit for Dearborn and Melvindale as to geographical. I think they're both going to get a lot out of that.
But we do a lot of things a lot.
And the state of Michigan.
Especially with Dearborn. We have our tech department where we have used them.
I know because of the merging, Dearborn and or Melvindale have gotten two grants. One went to Melvindale for reorganization, and one went to Dearborn for the sake of the merging to buy some additional equipment
That's
needed and
even.
Technology.
Governor,
so it was actually, besides the plan being more efficient, I think in the long run for both cities and giving better service, better response times, certainly in the Melvindale and the contiguous Dearborn area.
And the governor's rewarding
but,
us.
Yeah, and so, I mean, that's really nice and appropriate. It's a little incentive to explore that, but
he's insisting on it.
Well, it's actually part of
Dearborn Heights. You mentioned its strange shape, not the shape it's in, but physically,
the configuration.
It runs up and down Telegraph,
gully
sort of.
And, gully and Beach
no?
Daily.
Yeah, you know, it's hard.
I can't even visualize
me,
it. It's not a
barbell. It's a barbell,
but
the barbell bigger on one side than the other.
It's like a C-shape?
And a little bit extra here. Yeah, it's a really odd shape. I think probably Gully is the most central street that runs north-south, but it doesn't run contiguous through the city. We actually do not have a street that goes north to south that runs contiguous through the city.
Well, it becomes a sometimes.
So what's the city inside that C? Is it Dearborn?
Dearborn.
Well, Dearborn sneaks across Telegraph,
yes.
Of course. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
It's the part of Dearborn Township that Dearborn didn't take and incorporate. So
Dearborn would give up that part. So
what needs to happen?
I highly doubt, but we actually border seven communities.
Some pretty expensive homes out there.
It's a ridiculous situation. We got five school districts, including part of Dearborn and a smaller community. That doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Right.
Well, school districts were formed for cities, and I think that's how it happened.
Can't fix it.
We're speaking with Jenna Badalone, just a couple minutes left. She's a candidate for the office of mayor in Dearborn Heights here on the Dearborn Heights News and Views. WHFR.FM, of course, you're listening to. But to finish up, could you summarize now why people should vote for you, Janet Badalow, rather than the incumbent mayor, your challenger. I mean, you're the challenger, so
yes, I am.
Changes are difficult
and
for some people.
And include the big idea you want to change, like whatever.
And then, of course,
I've got.
And at the end, we'll talk about your contact information and where people can meet and greet you in the next couple of weeks, too.
Okay. Well, you know, I think that our city's current financial situation is really an indicator of the changes that we haven't made and the changes that I think we need to have made along the way and didn't. There's a lot of opportunities. I think a lot of us saw this coming. I know I did. But we really didn't make the changes. And like I said, technology, you know, looking at grant writers, partnering with other communities and things that would benefit us both. You know, I wanted to do things like have a facility study to look at the utilization of all of our buildings in mm-hmm. the city. And if we're not utilizing them well, maybe we can rent them out, generate some revenue so we don't have to close down buildings or do anything like that. I think restructuring in some departments that's been mentioned many times in the past during the current mayor's term, but has never come to fruition. So these are the things that I intend to do. But I think my my tagline, or whatever you want to call it, says it best, that I'm bringing back respect for you, the resident, and your tax dollars, because I think respect is something we've lost in the city. And
tell us about your upcoming events.
Oh, well, you can reach me at janet4mayor@gmail.com. My website is www.badalow.com. That's BADALOW.com. And I have a voicemail number at 313-915-2310. And I'm on Facebook, Councilwoman Janet Badalow, or you can like my page, Janet Badalow for Mayor. And I guess upcoming, well, there's two things that are upcoming this month, and I decided to combine them. So it's my birthday party and also a fundraiser, and that'll be on September 26th at Randy's Robindale Bar on Warren Avenue, starting at 5:30 p.m. And we're going to have a lot of fun because, and cake.
Got some music. Cake. Oh, and cake, too.
Cake. Wow. Oh, absolutely. So got a sweet tooth, have to have my birthday cake. But anyway, I hope that you will contact me. I'm out walking the neighborhoods. There's also a candidate forum, because, of course, I said earlier, mm-hmm. the League of Women Voters is not going to do candidate forums in Dearborn Heights, which is very disappointing. They are a volunteer organization, so we understand they're stretched to their limits this year. But it will be at the James Donovan Post on Van Born near Gully. And that would be on September 19th, which is a Thursday, beginning at 7 p.m. Association members of the Southwest Dearborn Heights Neighborhood Association can submit questions, but everyone is welcome to attend.
Well, we'll conclude.
Thank you very much.
Letting our listeners know, you can listen to this program on the internet at whfr.fm, or you can re-listen to this or any other archive program by selecting WHFR.FM, and then from our homepage, select the talk show button and choose the date of your program that you wish to re-listen to. Janet, thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Ned and Jay.
You've been listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. WHFR Dearborn.
Experimental Sounds, a WHFR benefit at Trina South, Saturday, September 21st at 8 p.m. WHFR is excited to have our latest fundraising concert at Trina South.